Masechet Baba Mesia Daf Zayin. Yesterday we saw a short forward beraita that said Hasifekot Nichnasin Ladir Lihit Aser. Animals that there is doubt whether they need to be tithed or not, you enter them into the pen to be tithed, and they can count towards the total, and you count them one by one, and then the tenth one, whichever one it is, so these uncertain animals can be counted. We're going to start off by analyzing this baraita. Amar le Rav Acha Medivti le Ravina, Mai Sefekot, Ile Masefek Bechorot, Yihye Kodesh Amar Achamana, Velo Shekevar Kadosh. So Rav Acha from Divti told Ravina, what does that mean, Sefekot? What types of doubts is this baraita talking about? If it means that there's a doubt whether this animal is a Bechor or not, if it is a Bechor, then it goes to the Kohen, and it does not get counted towards Ma'aser. If it's not a Bechor, then that's a regular animal, and yes, you have to put it in the pen for Ma'aser. So if that's what it's talking about, and it's teaching that, yes, you put the Bechor in there, Safek Berachot, in the pen, well, then that can't be, because the Pasuk says, Yihye Kodesh, the tenth one, will become consecrated. You count 1, 2, 3, 8, 9, 8, 9, and then the tenth one that goes through the gate, that's that one you make holy, meaning it was not holy before. But if it is a bechod, then it's already holy from the time it's born, and so cannot become holy if it's already holy, and therefore it cannot be that the safek in the spraita is talking about safek bechorot. Ela sefek pidyon peter hamor uchid Rav Nachman tamar Rav Nachman bar amar Rabba bar Abu yisel sheyesh lo asarat sefek pitre hamorot betoch beto mafrish alehen asara seyin umaseran vehen shelo. Rather, it's talking about peter hamor, a firstborn of a hamor is holy, but you don't give it to a kohen like that. You have to redeem it. You have to switch it for a sheep. That's the Torah law. Now that sheep itself does not become holy, but it is given to a Kohen. So if a Israel has 10 donkeys that might be firstborn or might not be, he's not sure, and they're in his house, so what should he do? Well, he should separate 10 lambs instead of them, and give ma'aser. He doesn't have to give anything to the Kohen, because hamosim echavero alav ha're'aya, let the Kohen come and prove somehow that these hamorim were firstborn, and then he can take the said that he switched them out for. But since the Kohen cannot prove that, so the Yisrael does not have to give anything to the Kohen. He does have to redeem the Chamor with the Seh, but that Seh has no holiness, and therefore you must take Ma'aser from it, and that's exactly what he does. That's what the Baraita was talking about. Now, my have alai alaha demasuta. Now going back to the yesterday's daf, where we had these two gentlemen were arguing over who owns the bathhouse, and they each had a claim to it, and then one of them made the whole thing hekdesh, and that was our question, and we brought it up the line, and we still have not found an answer, because the proposed answer was rejected. So what is the answer to that? Tashma damar Rabbi Chiya bar Avin, hava obada be Rav Chista, Rav Chista be Rav Huna, ufshata meha damar Rav Nachman, kom amon she'en yachol osio bedayanin, hikdisho eno kadosh. And so there was a case just like this that came to the Bet Midrash of Rav Chista. And from Rav Chista, they elevated up to Rav Huna. And they figured it out according to the statement of Rav Nachman, who said, any property that you cannot recover through the judges, if you make it hekdesh, it doesn't work. It's not hekdesh. In other words, in general, if something is something that if I own something, I can make it hekdesh. If I don't own it, I don't make the hekdesh. So what if it's in dispute? Well, it depends. If I have enough proof and the ability to go to court and get it, then I could also make it hekdesh, even if it's not currently in my possession. Since I can bring it into my possession by going to court, so I can make it hekdesh. Otherwise, not. That's his general rule. Now, in this case, of the two people that were fighting over the bathhouse, neither one had enough proof to get it over into their hands. And therefore, in this case, when one of them makes it ekdesh, it's not ekdesh. Since he could not possibly recover it through legal means, he doesn't have enough of an ownership over it to make it ekdesh. And so that was the ruling. No, it is not ekdesh. Good. Now we ask a question on this statement of Rav Nachman. Do you mean to imply that if you do have enough proof and evidence that you could go to court and retrieve it, then if you make it ekdesh, even before you go to court, it is ekdesh, even though he didn't actually take possession of it, right? That seems to be what he implies. It's the potential to retrieve it is what counts, not the actual retrieving it and having it in your possession. But this is contradicted by a statement of Rabbi Yochanan, v'hamar Rabbi Yochanan, gazav lo nityashua ba'alim, shenehem enam yicholin lakdisho, ze lefi she'ena shelo, v'ze lefi she'ena b'rshuto. If someone robs someone else of an item, neither party can make it ekdesh, as long as the owner did not yet despair of retrieving it. Once, if he does despair, then the robber actually owns the item. So then the robber who has physical possession and ownership could make it ekdesh. This is an interesting robber. He steals something and then he gives it away to charity. Okay, but as long as the owner does not despair, then neither party can make it ekdesh. The robber cannot do it because it doesn't belong to him. Even though he's holding it in his hand, it's not his to make ekdesh. And the owner, because it's not in his physical possession, even though he's the rightful owner, we see from Rabbi Yochanan that something has to be, you have to be the real owner, and it has to be in your actually in your possession, right? Even though the owner here could go to court and show this guy robbed it from me and retrieve it, but right now he hasn't done that yet. And so that's potential to get it back is not sufficient. So how could Rav Nachman dispute and argue against the Rabbi Yochanan? And the answer is Misavrat b'masuta metaltelin askinan b'masuta mekarkei askinan dechi achol osia b'dayanin b'rshute kaimeh. Oh, did you think when we applied Rav Nachman to this case of the bathhouse, did you think we were talking about a movable bath? If it's a movable bath, then it's not in anybody's possession, right? We're both holding on to it or it's somewhere, and neither has physical possession over it. And that's why, and in that case, you'd be right that we'd follow the Biochanan that says you have to, even if you're the rightful owner, you don't have possession, and therefore you could not make it ekdesh even if you had enough proof. But we're not talking about that. Instead, we're talking about masuta d'makarkei askinan techi achol osia b'dayanin b'rshute kaima. That we're talking about a bathhouse that's in the ground. It's a below the ground pool. So it's considered land. Now, land is not in anybody's possession. You can't steal land because it's right there. You know, you just go and take it. So whoever the rightful owner is already in his possession. So in that case, we're talking about a bath that's in the land, if he has proof that he could retrieve it, then that would mean he's the real owner and he can get it back potentially, and it's in his possession because it's right, it's land, and land never leaves someone's possession. And so if he had enough proof, then yes, you're right. In fact, he would be able to make it ekdesh. But in this case, because he doesn't have sufficient proof, that's why they ruled that he cannot make it hekdesh, and that's why it is not hekdesh. Tane Rav Tachlifa bar Ma'arva kamed Rabbi Abhu shenayim adukim betalit zenotel ad makom sheyado magat bezenotel ad makom sheyado magat v'ashar cholkin b'shave machvi le Rabbi Abhu b'shvua. So Rav Tachlifa, that who was from Eretz Yisrael, cited the following braita before Rabbi Abhu. If you have two people that are grasping, this is a different word than our Mishnah that says shnaim ohazim, who are holding adukim. It sounds like a stronger hold over it. They're grasping onto a garment. So the ruling of this braita is that one of the parties, he gets until the point that he's grasping, and the other also gets it to the point that he's grasping, wherever they are on it. If they're both right in the middle, then they each split it in half, or a quarter of the way, or a third of the way, whatever they're grasping, they get. And the rest of it, whatever's in between, right, let's say they're both at the quarter marks, so then everything from there to the middle, they would split equally. But it might not be equal. Maybe one has at the quarter mark and one's at the half mark. So then this one would get the half, that one would get the quarter, and the last quarter, they would split and they would get 1/8 each. Okay, so that's the Braita. But then Rabbi Abhu, who was listening to this, he made a hand gesture that said, also an oath, right? You can't take it without an oath. Either you can't take the part that they're grasping or the middle part or both, right? You have to take an oath before you get anything. So we ask about this Braita. How do we reconcile this with the Mishnah? Because the Mishnah says that they split it equally. And it doesn't say that this one takes until where his hand is and the other receives where their hand is, and only the middle part they split. So what do you do with the Mishnah? How do you explain the Mishnah? Amar papa ditfisi bechar kashta. The Mishnah is talking about a case where they come into court holding on to the fringes, the edges of the garment, and therefore neither one is grasping any part of the garment itself, and that's why they split the whole thing is disputed and they split the whole thing. But if they were both holding on to a major part of the garment, then they would get whatever major part they are holding on to. Amadav Mishashia, Shema'mina, Hai Sudra, Kevan de Tafis Be, Shalosh al Shalosh, Karinan Be, Venatan le Re'ayahu. Rameshashia derives a law from this, that when you do Kinyan Sudar, Sudar is a symbolic exchange, right? I'm going to, one part is going to give, sell his animal, land, whatever, and in exchange he receives just a handkerchief, which is obviously not worth the same amount as what he's giving over, but doesn't matter. It's a symbolic exchange. So we thought before Rabbi Shashia said that he would have to receive. Whoever is giving over the ox would have to receive the entire cloth. He has to do an acquisition over the entire cloth. But Rabbi Shashia learns from here, he says, actually, you wouldn't have to. The smallest piece of cloth that could be considered significant is 3 finger breaths by 3 finger breaths. So let's say you have a big handkerchief, and as long as he grabs on to a piece of it that's 3 by 3, then he already has, since he grasped it, he already has ownership over it. And so that will be sufficient for Venatan Le Re'ayahu, Pasuk from Rut, that says that this is how you do exchanges back at those times, that you take an item and you give it to your neighbor. So this is transferred. He has the 3 by 3 piece of the handkerchief, and therefore that's sufficient. He doesn't have to actually get the entire handkerchief, because as we just said, adukin, whatever you're grasping onto is yours. Because we consider it as if it was cut off from the rest of the handkerchief, and it's his, and therefore it effectuates the transaction. Get biyada umshicha biyado im yachol lenatekola biyoslo enam megoreshet v'im lav megoreshet. Wait, how is this a law of Rav Meshashia different from what Rav Chista said regarding gitin? That if a man gives his wife a get, it's in her hands, but the get is tied to a string. Now the husband is holding the string. So is that a valid get? Well, it depends. If the string is tied strong enough, and it's a strong enough string that if he would pull the string, the get would go out of her hands, and he would take it back, then there's no get. But if the string is very weak, and if he pulled on it, it would just break and wouldn't be able to pull along the entire get, then she is divorced. So how come over here, even though she's holding the entire get, that's a very significant part, the guy is just holding on to a string, why don't we say here, just like with the handkerchief, if you hold whatever part you're holding on to, it is yours, why don't we say here, she's holding on to the document, the paper, the leather of that the get is written on, who cares that he's holding the string? Why should that be a problem? And the answer is Hatam Kiritut Ba'ina Veleka, Hachanatina Ba'inan Veha'ika. In order to effectuate a get, it needs to have a severance. It has to be a total severance with no more connection to the husband. He cannot assert any control over her. And here, this is true for regarding some clauses that he might put into the get. And it's also true here physically, he cannot have a connection to the get that's so strong that he can pull it out of her hands. That's not severed. You have to, right? No strings attached. And so you don't have that. So the giving of a get requires a higher level of giving such that there's nothing else that is attached that can pull it back. Whereas if you're just doing a regular monetary transaction, then all you need to do is give it, as long as the handkerchief is given. And that means even a piece of the handkerchief is given and the other person is holding on to it. That's all you need. And we have that even if the other party is still holding on to the rest of the handkerchief. It's okay. Amadava, im haita talit muzhevet holkin, peshita. Rava gives a chidush that, let's say, there's the garment has some gold in it, golden thread. Then, and they're both holding on to it, also you divide it. So we say, isn't that obvious? Why would you think it would be different? What's the difference? What's made out of? Lasricha dekaed dahaba ben misae. No, we're not talking about that the entire thing is made out of gold equally, but there's one gold section in the middle. And so that's his chidush that they split it. Haname pishita. That's also obvious. Why would you think otherwise? Right? They're both holding on to the edges, and so you'd split it in the middle, and so this one would get half the gold, and that one would get half the gold. Isn't that obvious? La siricha de mikrav legaber dehad. Maudetem adamar le pelog hachi. Kamashmalan damar le maichazita pelag tachi pelog hachi. No, we're talking about a case where the golden patch is closer to one side. So I might have thought that the one that's closer to his side can say, okay, well, and that's, this is all on my side, and you have to split it vertically, and so I get the gold, the half with the golden patch, and you get the half without the golden patch. You might have thought that, and that's why Rava is saying, no, not true. The other side could say, well, who asked you to split it vertically, split it horizontally, split it a different way? Theoretically, if it's only useful if it's whole, then they'd sell it and split the money. So therefore, Rava's chidush is, it doesn't matter if one side is more valuable than the other, you still have to split it equally according to its value. We next have a very interesting case of two people holding on to a loan document. Tenorabanan, shenayim adukim bishtar. Malve omer shelihu v'nafal mimeni umsativ. Velove amar shelechahu ufrativ lecha yitkem ashtar bechotmav dibre rabbi. Two people walk into court holding a promissory note. The lender says, this is mine, and I dropped it, and then I found it. But it might, if the lender is holding it, that means it was not yet paid. And so he can use this IOU to extract the loan. However, the debtor says, I agree that it was yours, right? You did lend me money, and you had this promissory note, but I already paid it back. And therefore, you already gave it back, and I'm the one that lost it, and therefore, I don't have to pay you anymore. Now, it was someone lost it and it was dropped, and both of them found it and are holding on to it. Or one of them found it and the other one grabbed it. We're not sure. So what do we do? We're going to see a couple of opinions. According to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, we validate the signatures, and as long as they turn out that they're valid, that means we find the signatories and we say, did you sign this? Or we bring other people that know that these are their signatures or compare their signatures. And once it's ratified, we give it back to the lender. And the lender can use it to collect. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Yachloku Rashbag says, they split. They don't split the document. They split the monetary amount. If it says that you owe $1,000, then the lender can use it to collect $500. Nafal liyad dayan. And now another variation, if it's not, neither of them found it, but a judge found it, and it came into his possession. Lo yosiu olamit. He keeps it forever, and he doesn't give it not to the lender and not to the borrower, because we don't know whose it is. Just keep it there. Rabbi Yose Omer harehu bechezkato. Rabbi Yose disagrees with Tana Kama and says, no, it remains in its status, and you, in fact, you can give it to the lender, and the lender can use it to borrow money, to get his money paid back. Okay, so that's the different opinions here. We're going to analyze all of them. And the most important one is the one that seems to contradict our Mishnah. Amar mor yitkayem ashtar behotamav vegabe malve kuleh velet le matnitin shenaim ohazim. How could Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi is the one that said that we ratify the document, and as long as ratified, see, it doesn't actually say that you collect it all, but that's what we're assuming he means. You ratify it, and then it's collected. So we ask, what does that mean? That he can collect the entire amount of the loan, but doesn't he know the Mishnah that says two people are holding onto a garment, they split it, so it should be the same with a promissory note. And therefore, the opinion of Rashbag makes more sense and fits with the Mishnah. Why did Rabbi say that he gets paid the whole thing? Now notice that it's not clear that they're actually arguing about the same thing, because Rabbi just says, ratify the document. Rashbag says, split it. So we were understanding this so far as Rabbi said, ratify the document and collect the whole thing. And Rashbag, what does he say about ratify the document? It's not clear. But anyway, he says to split it. So that's why we asked the question. But now we're going to answer. Amarava, Amarav Nachman, Bimkuyam, Divra Kol Yachloku, Kipli Gibisha no Mikuyam. Rava, in the name of Rav Nachman, explains that if the document is already ratified, you can tell because when a document gets to a court and they ratify it, they write a hand pick, which is a certification that we already checked this document, and yes, it's already ratified. So if it's already been ratified, then there's no machloket. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi and Rashbag all agree that you split the amount in the document and he would have to pay half. That's the same as the case in our Mishnah, just like you split a garment, so too you split the amount in the document because they're both holding on to it. So Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi has no problem with this Mishnah. Rather, what is the machloket about if it has not been ratified? According to Rabbi, he says, even though the borrower admitted that he wrote the document, it's a valid document, because he said, right, remember he said, yes, this was during your document, and I did borrow from you, and I gave the document, but I paid for it already. And I paid you back already, and therefore, right, I'm not paying again. And this document does not belong to you anymore. That was his point. But he agreed that this was a valid document. Even though he agreed that it's a valid document that he wrote, nevertheless, he has to be ratified. And if he ratifies it, then they split it. And if he doesn't ratify it, and it's not, if he can't ratify it, as long as it's not ratified, then the borrower pays nothing. Now, why? Why would it have to be ratified if the borrower admitted that it's a valid document? My tama, haspa be'almahu, man kamashve lehaishtara, love hakama difriya. Because after all, without ratification, what is this document? It's just a shard. Sometimes they would actually write documents on a shard of pottery. Because once it broke, it's like using a used envelope. The back of an envelope is nice and cheap. But the point is, whatever it's made out of, it's not worth the paper that it's written on. It's just a shard. If it's not validated, then it has no legal significance. So now, what gives it legal significance? Who said that this is valid? It's the borrower. But the borrower already said it's repaid. So you can't use the borrower's own testimony against him. I mean, if he wanted to, if he was lying, he could have said, oh, it's not a valid document. So it's based on his word that we would know in the first place that it's a valid document, but he also said that it's been repaid, and so we can't use his word against him. And therefore, it has to be independently verified, and if it's independently verified, and now, well, they're both walking in and they're both holding it, in that case, we say you have to pay half. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel of Sabad, Modeh b'shar sheketavo, en sarich lekayemo. Vaf agav de la mekayem le, yachloku. Rashbag disagrees with that logic, and he says, if the borrower agrees that he wrote the document, therefore it is valid, and it does not need ratification. You only need ratification. It's not considered just a shard of clay. It only needs ratification if someone contests it. But here, even the borrower is agreeing that it's a valid document. And therefore, even if you don't verify it, ratify it, nevertheless, It's payable, but only half is payable because they're both holding it. In general, whenever you have a loan document, if the lender is holding on to it, then it has to be paid. If the borrower, once it's repaid, then it goes to the borrower, and the borrower should rip it up to make sure that he won't have it won't get into the wrong hands and he'll have to pay it again. Now we continue analyzing the Braita. Nafalia dayan lo yosi'u olamit. If it fell into the hands of the judge, he found it, then do not take it away from him. We don't know whose it is, so it won't go to either party. Maishan aliyah dayan. Now, what's the difference if it goes to the judge or anyone else? Wouldn't that be the same true for anyone else? Amar ava hachika amar. Ve'acher shemasa shtar shenafal liyad dayan. Ve'echidame dekata behen pek. Lo yosiu olamit. Rava says, in fact, that is what it means. Anyone else besides the two litigants who finds the document and knows that it had been processed by a judge. Now, how could he know it's processed by a judge? Because it has a henpek, it has a certification document attached to it. In that case, they should keep it, they should hold on to it, and not give it, not to the lender, and not to the borrower. And so what's the reason for this? And it's not only if he found a certification that he doesn't return it, it's all the more so if he doesn't find a certification, then certainly not. And all the more so, that's for sure. I don't have to tell you that. And also if it has a certification. Why? If it doesn't have a certification, then I don't return it because maybe the borrower wrote it, but he never ended up actually borrowing the money. He just wrote it in preparation for the possibility of borrowing, but maybe he never borrowed money and never gave it over. So if it's not certified, then maybe it was never used at all. So not only that case, which is obvious, but even if it has a certification on it, which means it definitely was used, meaning that there was a loan and the borrower gave it to the lender, so the lender could use it, because if it went to court, that means, right, that the lender went and brought it to court. However, if it's certified, he still cannot return it because maybe it's already been repaid. And so either way, whether it has no certification or it does have certification, either it was never used or maybe it was already paid, it would only really be a small window when he comes to collect it and then needs to ratify it between that point and when he actually gets paid and gives it back to the borrower, and the borrower should have destroyed it, is when, if it got lost during that time, then it would still be payable. And therefore, since it's more likely that it was it's not payable, then whoever finds it does not return it no matter what. But Rabbi Yose says, no, we assume it's presumptive status that right now it's not destroyed, it's here, and it's a loan document, and therefore give it to the creditor, and he can use it to collect his loan. And we don't worry that it was already repaid. Now we ask, Rabbi Yosef doesn't worry that it was about repayment. And he says, just give it back to the lender and he can use it again. This seems to contradict what Rabbi Yosef says in a different braita regarding a ketubah. A ketubah is also like a loan document in that it says that the husband will owe to the wife a certain amount of money upon death or divorce. And so as long as the document exists and the wife has it, she can use it to collect. So what if there's a lost document, a lost ketubah? V'hatanya, masa shtar ketubah bashuk. If someone finds a ketubah in the middle of the marketplace, bizman shabal modeh yachzir la'isha. If the husband agrees, oh yes, that's my wife's, and you know, I never paid it. So if he agrees, then certainly you give it back to the woman. En abal modeh lo yachzir lo lazeh ve'lo lazeh. But if the husband does not agree, he said, oh, I paid it already, then we do not give it to either party. We're not going to give it to the husband either. If the husband has it, then he can use it as proof that he paid. So we're not giving him proof, we're not giving her proof. We're just going to leave it in escrow until we find more proof or Eliyahu comes. Rabbi Yose Omer, Oda tachat ba'ala, yachzir la'isha, nitarmelo nitgarasha, lo yachzir lo lazeh ve lo lazeh. Rabbi Yose makes a lot of sense. He said, well, let's see, if they're still married, then presumably he did not pay the ketubah, right? Because why would he pay the ketubah if they're still married? So then give it back to her. Whereas if she was widowed or divorced, then don't give it to anyone because we're not sure. Maybe she was widowed but didn't get her ketubah paid yet. It could be some time until she gets her ketubah paid. And so therefore, we cannot give it to either one. So you see that we have a contradiction, because Rabbi Yosef in the first baraita says that we assume that it was not repaid and therefore give it back to the creditor. But here he says we worry that it was paid. Therefore we do not give it back to either party. We don't give it back to the woman, right? Maybe she was already paid in the case that she was divorced or widowed, where it is likely. So Rabbi Yosef seems to follow two different paths. How do we resolve this contradiction? We're going to see three ways to resolve it. The first way is ipuch. You know what? Reverse the opinions in the first baraita. Nafali adayan lo yosio olamit Rabbi Yosef. If a judge found it, then don't leave it there forever, according to the Biyoseh. Though that would be consistent with what the Biyoseh says here. As long as she was widowed, don't return it to anybody. So the Biyoseh is the one, in fact, that says, maybe it was repaid, don't return it. And the Chachamim, they're the ones that say that when you find a loan document, we assume it's presumptive status and you give it back to the lender and he can continue to collect with it. All right, that resolves the contradiction of Rabbi Yosef, but now it brings up a new problem. Now we have a contradiction between Rabbanan, say, here in the Braita regarding Ketubot, where it says, do not return it, because right, if the husband does not agree, we do not return it. We suspect that it was repaid. And here he said, in the case of a loan document, he says, yes, return it. We don't suspect that it got repaid. So what are you going to do with the Chachamim now? All right, no problem. We'll have to modify a little bit the second Beraita as well. Shtar Ketubah Kula Rabbi Yosef. In fact, that entire Beraita regarding the finding of the Ketubah is entirely the opinion of Rabbi Yosef. There is no machloket there. It doesn't even quote Chachamim. Chasre mechasre v'achi katani. En abal modeh lo yachzir lo lazeh v'lo lazeh. V'emer dimem amorim shinit armela o shinit garasha. Abal oda tachat ba'ala yachzir laisha. The Braita should read that if the husband does not agree to give it back to her because he's claiming that it was paid, then we don't give it back to either party. When is that true? Only if they were already, she was widowed or divorced. Because then it's more likely that she, in fact, got what was paid. But if they're still married, then do give it back to the woman, because there's no reason to think that he paid it already. Shed, and it's not Rabbi Yosef, as Rabbi Yosef disagreeing, but rather it's explaining why is this the halacha, because it's based on what Rabbi Yosef said, where he said, if they're still married, then give it back to the woman. If she's widowed or divorced, then do not give it back to anybody. So in fact, the entire Beraita is Rabbi Yosef. It's not quoting Chachamim at all. And in fact, Chachamim would say, give it back to the lender. And so the Chachamim, if we say the same thing, for Ketubah, would say that give it back to the wife. She in this case is the one that's collecting the money, and so she gets it back. Rabbi says, no, you don't have to switch around the order. You can leave it as is. And here's how you read it. Rabbi Yosef is speaking according to the opinion of Chachamim. They're saying as follows. Rabbi Yosef, as he says in the first Beraita, doesn't worry about repayment and says it's still in play. Give it back to the lender. And here he would say, give it back to the woman in all cases. That's what he said. So he says, according to me, even if she was widowed or divorced, we don't worry about repayment, because that's what I said in the first Beraita, and that's what he says himself here also in Ketubah, finding in Ketubah. But the second Beraita, when Rabbi Yosef was talking, he was saying, Liditchu, according to your opinion, that we do worry that it was paid back, and in a loan document, wouldn't give it to anybody if a third party found it. And nevertheless, here, Odu li mihat be'odat achat ba'ala de'yachazir la'isha de'la bat pira'on hi. V'amru l'arbanan emor serare at pasa. I agree, you should agree that if she's still married, then it's very unlikely that the ketubah would be paid. Why would the husband pay the ketubah while they are still married? So then it should go back to the wife, right? Because it's not subject to payment yet. It's not collectible yet. So what does it matter what the husband says? We should always give it back to the wife. Wouldn't you agree with me, at least in that case? And the rabbis say, not necessarily. It could be that he paid her bundles of money, meaning could be that the husband, even while they're married, wants to prepay the ketubah. Maybe he doesn't want her to have to deal with the inheritors and extract the money from there, or he wants to pay it over time. And so he leaves her money from in bundles, and maybe it is in fact already paid, and therefore you cannot assume, if the husband disagrees, that it hasn't been paid and give it to the wife. Ravina amar leolam epuch kamaita. A third answer is we saw the first one, then Rafapa, and then Ravina here is the third answer. Leolam epuch kamaita v'tamad rabanan hacha mishum dechashina lishne ketubot. Ravina says, you know what? Switch around the first braita, as we said earlier, and that which you asked, this creates a contradiction for Rabbanan. Instead of rewriting the second braita to be all the opinion of Rabbi Yose, we can explain that there's a distinction between the cases. In the case of the first braita, according to Rabbanan, when we switch the opinions, Rabbanan say that we do not suspect it was repaid. It stands as is and give it to the lender. But in the case of a ketubah, we worry about two ketuvot. It could be that the ketubah, the first ketubah was lost, and then the husband wrote a second ketubah for the wife, and then it was found. And now the ketubah, there's actually two ketuvot, and one of them is lost, and he already paid back the one of the ketubot, and so that was torn up. But the second ketubah that they thought was lost is now found, but the ketubah payment was already given. And so since there's a possibility of two ketubot, so we have to worry about that. And if the husband claims that, oh, there was two ketubot, I already paid her the amount that she's owed, and this one is a second copy that's invalid. So that's why in the case of ketubah, we worry about that and we don't give it to either party, which is not so with a loan document. So that's that's why Rabbanan make a distinction between the cases. And the B.O.S.A. says, we don't worry about two ketubot. That's a rare occurrence. That they should lose it and have to write another one. And therefore, Rabbi Yose says that we do not assume that it was repaid. And therefore, we give it back to the wife as long as they are still married. We next have a clarification of the law of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi and Rashbag that said that if two people come into court holding on to a loan document, the lender and the borrower, and each claiming that it's theirs, and one says it has to be paid, and one said it has already been paid, then they said we split it, meaning if the loan document was for 1,000, then the borrower has to pay 500 to the lender. So Amar Rabbi Elazar Machloket B'Shnehem Adukim Batofes U'Shnehem Batoref. Rabbi Elazar says this Machloket only applies when both of them are holding on either to the Tofes part of it or the Toref part of it. There are two parts of a loan document. It's actually an opposite order here. The Toref is written above. That's the part that is the main essential section that has the date. That's going to be important. It's the only part that has the date. And it has the names and the place and the amount and all that. Tofes is standard language that's just like put in. That's, you know, the filler language that you'd boilerplate that you'd have on standard documents. At the end of the tofes is a quick summary of the major points without the date and the signatures of the witnesses. So if they're both holding on to the tofes, let's say, they're both holding the bottom of it, or they're both holding the toref, they're both holding the top of it. And then you would split the value inside evenly. Aval echad aduk batofes v'echad aduk batoref, zeh notel tofes v'zeh notel toref. But if let's say one of them is holding the bottom where the tofes is, and the other is holding on to the top where the toref is, then they split it in half. We're going to see. It doesn't mean that they actually rip the document in half and each take half home, But we'll see what this means. It'll be the value of how much the top is worth versus the value on the bottom, because one has a date and one doesn't. Okay, Rabbi Yochanan amar le'olam holki, and Rabbi Yochanan says, no, no matter what, they split the amount evenly. Just, you know, 500, he pays 500 and not the other 500. Vafilu achad aduk batofes v'achad batoref v'hatanya. Zenotel al ma'ad makom she'edom aga'at. La siricha deke toref be'mis'e. We challenge Rabbi Yochanan. You say they split evenly the money and you pay $500. And would you say that even if one was actually grasping on to the tofes at the bottom and the other one was grasping the toref at the top? And after all, we said in a baraita that if you're holding that entire piece, then you get that part that you're holding and that you're grasping, and so to the other. So would you say even if they're grasping this section and this paragraph and that paragraph, that still you would just pay 500? And Rabbi Yochanan would not say that. Rather, where we're talking about where the Torah is in the middle. So they're grasping on, one's grasping on this, one's grasping on that side. And they wrote it in such a way that the Torah paragraph is in the middle of the document so that neither one is grabbing onto it. But Rabbi Yochanan would agree, if one is grabbing onto the Torah, he would get that, the value of that paragraph. Okay, so we ask, if so, then what's his chidush? If it's in the middle, if the Torah is in the middle, and neither of them is grasping onto it, so then and then you split it. Well, then everybody would agree that you split it. What's he adding? We're talking about a case where it's closer to one of the sides. So I might have thought so neither of them is actually grasping the physical place where that Torah paragraph is. But it is closer to the place where one is holding it. So I might have said that the one to whom it was closer, it is closer, will say, well, cut it in half vertically, and now this paragraph is in my side. And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan's teaching that, no, the other one can say, well, why did you decide to cut it this way? Cut it instead the other way, and therefore that paragraph is half-half. And if the paragraph is half-half, again, we're not actually going to rip it, but if they're both holding on to the piece of the same paragraph, or it's in the middle, so then they're going to divide the, or neither of them is holding on to the paragraph, all to the paragraph itself, then we're going to say that you have to pay half of the amount. If one is holding on to one of the paragraphs only, then they would get that paragraph and the other one would get the value of the other paragraph, which we'll explain. So Rav Acha from Difti tells Ravina, according to Rabbi Elazar, who says, yeah, oh, you get this paragraph and you get the other paragraph. Well, what do you need that for? Right? Do you mean this literally, that you're going to rip it in half? Now, once it's ripped in half, it's not worth anything. You can't use a torn document to collect a loan. In fact, once it's collected, then that's what we do. We tear it, so it can't be used. So are they arguing about this because they want to use this piece of leather to cover their flask, their open wine bottle? Is that what they're arguing about? This, 10 cents that the document material is worth? No, we're talking about the monetary value. And here's what it means. This is what we mean. A document that has a date on it, how much is that loan document worth versus one that doesn't have a date on it? After all, the top part, the toref, has a date. The tofes does not have a date. Well, here's the difference. If it has a date on it, then you can collect from land that was the land of the borrower is leaned to the lender, and so he can collect his loan from a land that he, even if he sold that land, the borrower sold the land, the lender can go and take from it because it has a date. It has to have a date because you have to know whether if there's another loan outstanding and that also has a lien, you have to know which lien is first. Or if it was sold before the the loan or after the loan. If it was sold after the loan, then there is a lien on it. Otherwise, not. If it has no date, then you cannot collect from a liened property. So, right, the other one, has you cannot collect from it. So, therefore, we calculate what would be the difference between having a document with a date on it that would be worth, let's say in this, you know, in this case, that would be worth $1,000 because you can collect from all the liened property. Whereas, so that would mean if you have the Tofes that has a date, but if you only have the Tofes, which doesn't have a date on it, well, how much would that be worth? Well, you can still collect something, but maybe it doesn't have cash on hand that would pay for it, and you wouldn't be able to collect from the land that he had sold, and so that would be worth maybe only a 600. So in that case, if the lender is the one that has the Toref, then we say, okay, you have the Toref, but not the Tofes. So what's the difference between having the date and not having the date? It's 1,000 minus 600, so that's 400. Okay, you have the Toref, you get 400, and then the rest of the 600, that's what they will split. The value of that is what they will split down the middle, and he will end up having to pay 300 of that 600. Okay, good. Now that we've resolved that, we come to a new important realization. That means in general, when all the cases that we've been talking about, when it says you split it, it doesn't mean that you literally split the item and cut it in half. Rather, you split the value in half. Just like with this promissory note, you don't rip it in half and say, here, you can use this to cork your bottle. But rather, we're talking about the value. And we're going to try to prove this. It has to be so, because the first case in our Mishnah, when two people are holding on to a garment, are you going to say that literally that means we tear it in half? But then you're ruining it, right? That's not going to be good. You take a scarf and cut it in half, or a sheet. It's not going to be good. No, that's not a good proof, because it could be good for children, right? It could be an adult cloth, adult scarf, and then you cut it in half. Okay, it's good for children. So it still has value. So maybe they would, in fact, cut it in half in that case. Wait, what about the case of Rava? That, remember, he spoke about a golden garment that has golden threads, and he said that you cut it in half, you split the value, you split it. Would that mean that you actually cut it in half? Certainly that you'd be ruining, right? You're going to give that to kids, a golden scarf. He says, yes, you can give it to princes, little princes. They're very wealthy, and they would get a small golden scarf. So yes, it still has value. Okay, what about the third case in our Mishnah? Two people are riding on an animal, and they have equal claim to it, and they split it in half. Does that mean that you're going to cut it? You're going to cut the animal down the middle, and here, you take this half, but now you're ruining it. Now, if it's a kosher animal, fine, then that could be you do shechita, and then you get half the edible meat, and you get half the edible meat. And so, yes, it still has value. But let's say it's a non-kosher animal. Well, now you can't eat it, you can't ride it, it can't work for you. You're just destroying it. Surely, in that case, it means it's the monetary value. You sell it and split the money. And so here too, in the other rulings, and certainly regarding the loan document, it means that we split the monetary value and not tear the item itself. Baruch Adonai L'olam. Amen ve'amen.